You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey guys, welcome to Myopia Summer Reruns. This is Nick, and I'm on panel with
Tom Herman, host of the Geekly Oddcast.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this because we are doing your choice for summer reruns. And your choice for summer reruns this summer rerun is what?
Batman Returns.
Beautiful. And why did you choose Batman Returns?
Oh, did you? It was that was actually my first podcast ever.
Yeah, man. Have you rewatched it since we did it? This was, what, like 3-4 years ago?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I've seen the movie since then, and I can't watch it without thinking of all the things we kind of talked about.
Yeah, I rewatched this one. It's kind of like the Christmas Batman movie. I think it's great.
Oh, no, I love it. It's wonderful. I never want to see Danny DeVito as a villain in that regard ever again, but I mean, everything about that movie is fantastic, to the fact that, I mean, give me Christopher Walken as some type of villain and I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because in most movies, I don't want to say the roles would be reversed because Danny DeVito often plays kind of this monsterman. Like we recently watched Matilda, you know, and that has this monster man quality to it. But Christopher Walken is like a clean, upstanding, like he's a besuited businessman slash like politics type. It's perfect. I never would have thought of him in that role, but he's so good in it.
I mean, I kind of think when I was like, which Roger Moore Bond movie was it where Bond was going around as St. John Smythe,
A View to a Kill,
and where you had another Christopher Walken as the respectable a landed gentry.
Yeah. But here he's less of a cartoon somehow. I don't know.
Like, yes.
Your gig, for those of you who have not listened enough to Thomas's podcast, The Geekly Oddcast, you have the two extremes. You have the ongoing role-playing games, the Outer Worlds. But here with you on the panel really quick, we should talk about your more basic show, which is, just kind of geek talk. There's games sometimes. There's kind of, you know, bigger topics, but
yeah, the general idea when it started was to get a bunch of people around the panel and kind of have a conversation. The first one we recorded anyway, not the first one necessarily that posted, was Death of the Saturday Morning Cartoon. Then we did reboots. I mean, we'll just take a topic and we'll run with it, and invariably we will run incredibly far off topic, but it's generally good for a laugh. But we also have the games, which is something that Nick and I came up with farther down the line, where we take an idea, and the best one I think was the one around Halloween called Pitches Get Stitches.
Yeah.
Where we take an idea and try and make a horror movie out of it.
Right. And I'm bringing this up not only because we're going to talk a little Geekly Oddcast style here, but Thomas is kind of the creative head, fourth member that helped us not only design this season, so he'll be regularly mentioned and regular on this season this coming year. However, he's also here so to announce with me that, as I mentioned in the last couple reruns, once a month we're going to drop an extra episode, usually the first Monday of the month. And four times in the next year, we're going to do a Geekly Oddcast versus Myopia crossover game, where not unlike an improv game where it's 2-on-2, we're going to be doing this kind of thing with kind of an adjunct who will be probably another podcaster or, you know, kind of local or regional comic nerd celebrity type.
So what we'll do is if you go and you find some of the games that are on the Geekly Oddcast, what we're going to do is instead of having it be a round table where everybody pitches an idea, it'll be a little bit closer to the episode, the most recent one where sequels nobody asked for. Where instead of having each person pitch one, though, a team off will pitch something, and then the winner will be chosen by the host. And then, as with sequels nobody wanted, the entire panel will then come together and try and turn it into a full film.
Right. And it could be something like filling out a version of Mortal Kombat, but with 80s action stars.
Yes.
Or it could be recasting a movie, or it could be something. But the idea is that it's kind of a nerdy improv game. It will be our bonus episode, and it will run concurrently with when it's going to appear on the Geekly Oddcast, which, you know, it'll allow you to hear the different points of comedic view between his regulars and our regulars. And, you know, it'll probably be me and Daniel versus Thomas and his brother, or Thomas myself and Jareth.
Yeah. Then the benefit will be is if whoever we get as host, we can make them put their head in their hands, which is usually the goal of these types of episodes, is to just make the host's head hit the table.
And it will be a way to kind of parlay us into a more, I don't want to say us-centric, but dude letter podcasting, our group of people who do the things that we do, so you can hear more of our kind of failed attempts to make things work a little bit behind the curtain, and it will be a chance to hear more of us, so that's great.
It will be your reason for why or why not the Myopia and Geekly Oddcast should have their own production studio.
Should exist, yeah. But with this in mind, we should talk a little bit Geekly-wise about Batman.
Yes. So do we want to talk about the fact that that there's a good amount of evidence that Kane pretty much ripped Batman off straight from the shadow?
Yeah. And at this point in the last, I think it's 3 months, we found some of his notes that have come out, which is something. On top of that, similarly, after Marvel's first Avengers movie, most recent Avengers movie, Infinity War, DC decided to announce a whole new slew of movies coming out the next 2 years, of which I could not be bothered about any of them, except for I am interested in this new Batman movie.
And maybe Wonder Woman too. That's
Wonder Woman too, yeah.
But I mean, if we wanted to talk DC movies, which we probably don't.
No.
I'd rather talk Batman, and honestly, it's the only solid good thing that Frank Miller ever did was take the character down a darker road,
yeah,
that gave us the grim Batman we think of, like Batman Year One, and even the Dark Knight Returns, those sort of things that really brought about a grittier, grimmer Batman. And albeit many other people did it much better than Miller, and I don't care if you think that's sacrilege.
No, but I mean, you're right. Like, I do get, like, there's not a lot I give him credit for, but the redarkening, him and I almost said Arthur Miller. No, it's an asshole. Alan Moore.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because Alan Moore.
Definitely asshole.
But I mean, that was kind of his game. Like, he's like, I'm going to destroy comics. And all he did was make them grittier and darker. But
I'm going to write The Watchmen, and it will be the ultimate comic book so that none others will come following. The Watchmen will be my raison d'etre to prove that comics are stupid and nobody should ever write comics again. Turns into most popular graphic novel of all time, or one of.
A masterpiece. Yeah. Like, it's a masterpiece.
I'll make the killing joke and that will end comics. Another masterpiece.
I mean, and here's the thing. Like, the only thing that we got in the last...
Scout!
Well, I mean, and that was kind of his thing. Like, by the... What was it? Dark Knight Returns Part 3. The whole thing was about him not being gay and him, like, hating on Robin, too. It's just... He's... Like, I don't know who's more of a sad, weird person. I'm going to go with Frank Miller, but Alan Moore is without his charm.
You're talking a real thin line. I think my favorite, there was, I think his name is Dave Willis. He wrote a webcomic called Short Pact.
Yeah.
And he had a section where it was Frank Miller and someone points a gun at him or basically says, you have to write a female character who's not a stripper, not a prostitute, or not a whore.
Yeah.
And is just sitting there until the last panel, and all that runs through the thoughts and says, whore, 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 whore.
Yeah. Sure, of course. Because that's like the thing he did to Catwoman, too. It's the worst. Anyway, the only other thought I had was they've been talking Ben Affleck's Batman might finally show up, and that was after he was supposed to direct, walked away from directing. It's still going to happen, it looks like. And it might be, once again, the Penguin as the villain. I just don't know. I unfortunately think the DC Universe went already way past it. Even Wonder Woman, which is a pretty good, like, grounded movie, they fight a Greek god in the first one. To just go back to, like, a mafia kingpin doesn't seem the right world, man.
I mean, I agree. The problem is the only way for Batman, the benefit at least for Batman is you've got your well, the one problem is you're too close to the Nolan movies, which hurts you.
Yeah.
But at least people walk into a Batman movie with the knowledge that even like Batman is the pinnacle of human conditioning, but he's not Captain America. Like he's still human. So there's a limit to what he's capable of fighting. And so if you do it right, yeah, you can go back to a mafia kingpin or something, but I agree with the whole Marvel ethos as it is. It's difficult. And as you said, Wonder Woman fighting a Greek god. The only way you're really going to be able to put Batman on a team or in a situation where he can face off against something that is superpowered is either animated or – well, that's the other problem. You've got all this Batman animated series. Heck, they just had a Batman and Harley Quinn, and I think that was better than Batman versus Superman or Justice League combined.
Sure. Well, I mean, and then like – even, you know, Marvel does a good job usually of explaining it. Like, for example, in Black Panther, there's a suit aspect to it that they explain. And, like, Killmonger's just kind of a guy. He's like, you know, I think he's a SEAL.
Yeah, and then they give him the fruit of the kings that basically – and it basically gives them Captain America-level powers.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it's talking about. Like, you know, Tony has his suit – and then the villains also often have a suit when it's an Iron Man movie. And so there's this kind of parody that is explained. Even in Spider-Man, when he's fighting the Vulture, it's a suit. It's these are people. But in the DC Universe, like, the only person we fought, we really didn't fight. We just kind of arrested him as they were fighting Doomsday, right? Like, and that's the problem for me. Like, and so what they're going to do, they're going to take the Penguin and probably elevate him by having like Scarecrow toxin. That's very this universe. I just hope we don't get Bane again, because that would be way too on the nose.
Well, you know what drives me slightly nuts, and it's sad because I feel the third Nolan Batman movie really did us a disservice by taking away like No Man's Land.
Yeah.
The No Man's Land story. That would be fantastic for a movie. Like, and that's kind of what they did, but they didn't really do it the justice that it needed. A No Man's Land movie, or really going deep into the Batman history. You don't have to make something new. You could pull one of those storylines off the shelf and turn it into a movie, and you'd have something great. And that's, I think, the benefit of Nolan was, for the most part, he kind of did that.
Yeah.
And that's really all you have to do for Batman. It's like, the stories are written. Go grab Geoff Johns, put it into film format, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
I think DC's problem is that they are so desperate to catch Marvel that they're unwilling to do what Marvel did.
Yeah.
And they also don't have Disney funding them.
Well, they don't. And the other problem is kind of a DC problem, which is Batman is sometimes a ground level guy. Sometimes he's fighting on a global scale, and unfortunately, sometimes he's in space. I hate him when he's in space, but thing is, you can't have those two working at the same time. You can't have him stopping people, like, you know, robbing little old ladies, and also fighting Doomsday in the same universe. And they went with fighting Doomsday, and there's no ground level people left, and so there's nowhere to ground any of these people. And, you know, Bruce Wayne here, I do like Ben Affleck. I think Jeremy Irons is great. I think the Flash character that they've developed is interesting, because unfortunately in this universe we have two Flashes, because the Flash TV show is nothing like the one from Justice League.
Yeah, and you know what stinks is that if I were to go back, and this would be a fun – actually, this would be a fun game, and I'll pitch it out here about what I would do, but we could bring it on as even the first, you know, Myopia versus Geekly podcast. If you were to scrap the DC universe, you keep Wonder Woman somehow, but because Gal Gadot kicks ass. But,
yeah, she's great.
You scrap the rest of the DC universe and you start again. How would you start? And honestly, yeah. I would follow the Marvel track, but I would start with Batman. Batman would be my Iron Man, and I would build from there.
Yeah.
And then eventually, like, you know, Batman scales back, because it's like you've got Superman, you've got Flash, even Green Lantern, like anyone you go with. And Batman becomes so quickly outclassed that all he really has to offer is the fact that he's a tactical mastermind.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I would go, is build out from there and scale up.
Yeah.
The same way that Marvel did. And yeah, someone's going to accuse you of following Marvel's footsteps, but it's a tried and true formula, and it works. And it's still working.
Well, I mean, and the other thing, which I will throw at you, I think the problem is that DC owned too many of its own properties. You know, like, because unfortunately for Marvel, when it started, Iron Man was not that big of a deal. It became a big deal. Now you can't think of it without thinking of Robert Downey Jr. But other than a bad cartoon in the 60s, he hadn't done much with Iron Man.
Come on, let's start with the big three that Marvel Studios took. Because they sold off Spider-Man and they sold off X-Men. And I mean all
and
of X-Men.
And Fantastic Four.
And Fantastic Four, yeah. And so you've got the first three heroes were Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor. And while they might be some of the most well-known, they are not the most popular.
Yeah. Captain America hasn't had a good strip since the 80s, effectively.
No.
And to that end, Batman is such a known quantity. Same with Superman. They both had successful film franchises in the past. I think that might have hurt it more than anything. Maybe that's why Wonder Woman was the best. She hadn't had anything since, that Wonder Woman TV show in the 60s or 70s.
Yeah. No, I think that's really fair. I mean, and I think that's something that Marvel was able to capitalize on is basically building all of these characters from scratch. Because what is it? I mean, if I think it's Superman, heck, every Superman film, so you've had the original with Christopher Reeves, you had Superman Returns with Brandon Routh,
yeah.
And they put in a scene that made him look very, very much like the Christopher Reeve, like sometime up the sky. They did the same thing with Henry Cavill in the first one.
No.
They CGI'd onto his face to make him look almost identical to Christopher Reeve because those movies, though everything past two, became remarkably silly. Christopher Reeve is now, I mean, even to what... Alex Ross looks at as Superman. If you look at the Alex, sure. It's Christopher Reeve is our Superman.
Yeah.
He is the image that we impart on him, and it hurts. Like, I mean,
well, and I mean, the only thing I would say before we kind of cut to the actual episode is, it would be great if we got a non-big hero to get their own strip. You know, like I think that's why Cyborg got so much response in the Justice League movies, because no one, I mean, he's known, but he's not as big of a deal. Hawkman, same idea. Like, that would be great. Like, not one of their big four, just someone that they can tell an original story with.
I mean, you could even do something with The Flash. I know you've got The Flash TV show, but you could play with that because, I mean, yeah, there was a Flash show in the 90s. It didn't really go anywhere. The Flash show today is great, but it's a CW melodrama.
What's that damn thing where they reset everything because of The Flash?
Flashpoint.
That should be their next movie. Because if they do Flashpoint, they can start over.
Yep.
So with that, we're going to cut you to the episode. Tune into Geekly Oddcast every Thursday.
Every Thursday.
Turn into us every Thursday. And we'll see you next time. This is our last one before we return in August. We'll see you then. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
What is the Geekly Oddcast? It's a panel show of television.
I mean, seriously, where else was I supposed to go and watch Gomez Adams ride a rocket ship on a railroad track?
Gaming.
And the dice say... 17.
Oh my god, 17 is Mystic Quest. And whatever comes to mind.
Why does Zod need a starship?
Alternating Thursdays on the Geekly Oddcast.
So, John, how you doing?
I'm all right. I'm doing very well. Ready for a blast from the past.
Note to viewers, we are not going to watch the movie Blast from the Past, starring, God, I don't even remember, Brendan Fraser?
Brendan Fraser?
Ew.
Yeah.
So we're going to watch a movie worth watching tonight, actually, thank God. After a series of terrible movies and then Batman, we are watching the sequel for our November series month, Batman Returns. What do you remember about Batman Returns, John?
I remember that it was a very dark movie with almost ghostly pale people inside of it. And as a child, it really freaked me out.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Are you saying there's a Tim Burton movie with pale people in it?
I know, right? It boggles the mind. But this one, you know, it was the first one, the first Tim Burton movie I remember seeing, and it's the first Tim Burton movie that I remember seeing.
Mm. Frankly, what's interesting to me is I'm having a hard time remembering Batman in this Batman movie. What I remember is the Penguin, and I remember Catwoman, and I have a very hard, like, and so I don't, again, this is one of the movies that I've seen before, but not seen in a very long time. So to me, at least in memory, this is maybe Batman without Batman?
Well, it's a lot like the first one, where Batman was just there to show off the background and the villain character. And in this one, he's just kind of there while the villains do whatever it is they do, the hijinks and amok. And the plot just kind of exists somewhere in the background.
Yeah, and again, this is super Tim Burton-y, but something Cobblepot. I forget his first name.
Oswald Cobblepot.
Which is a name that just screams like Dickensian villain. I love it. Is, you know, interesting because he's both Bruce Wayne's rival and Batman's rival. And so he's an interesting character. What's also interesting to me is Tim Burton at this point is a superstar out of nowhere, right? Because Edward Scissorhands was kind of a cultish movie. The first Batman, though, at the time was, I think, the most profitable movie ever.
Yeah.
Not adjusted for inflation, just straight up movie money. And so he makes the second movie. It's even darker than the first, which already was a dark movie. And I believe at this point he walks away from the franchise. And it's not that Schumacher comes in. No, I think he says, I could do more movies if I wanted, but I don't want to do more movies. And so it's interesting because to him, then, this is where he said, I have told the Batman story. I wonder if it kind of holds up as an endpoint then, because it was 3 years later still, 4 years later before he was offered Superman, and then that project fell through.
Thankfully.
I don't know. Nick Cage could not have been any worse than that one with Kevin Spacey in it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the one where Richard Pryor is Brainiac or whatever with the computers.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that. Yeah.
So back to a good movie.
Anyway, back to a good movie. Yeah, this one holds a lot of memories for me that, like I said, this was one of the first Tim Burton movies I saw. And from what I can recall, it was one of the first movies I saw in the cinema. But beyond that...
The cinema. Yes.
Beyond that, it was also the point where at McDonald's, they had the little toys in the Happy Meals.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, 2 weeks into their, like, six-week run or whatever it was that they had the toys, my dad decided I was too old for Happy Meals.
Oh.
So I couldn't finish the set. I was devastated.
That's a tragic story.
It really is. And I think for that reason, if nothing else, I equate McDonald's with tears. But also, this movie sticks out in my mind as like a defining moment in my childhood.
Uh-huh.
And to make a third or fourth point,
yeah,
is one of the first ones where I actually felt sorry for the villain.
Yeah.
Because if nothing else, this one, it's all about the Penguin.
Yeah,
yeah. It's about the Penguin being a tragic, almost Shakespearean character.
Yeah, yeah.
He was an orphan. He grew up not on the streets, but under the streets.
Right.
And he's got this weird deformity, and he's just... And the way he dies is so sad.
It is. I think I could be wrong, but I remember his last Danny DeVito creepy line is, all I need is a glass of ice water or ice, something like that. And it's very dark.
And then the
dark.
Penguins take him to his tomb.
Valhalla.
Which is sad.
Penguin-hala. Yeah, no, it's amazing how many times McDonald's has also come up in this podcast already, and presumably will continue as merchandising our childhood. So, with that being said, it sounds like you think this is going to hold up and hold up very well.
I think it will.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, let's go watch Batman Returns.
Yeah.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. Today we watched Batman Returns, Christopher Walken's glorious sequel to A View to a Kill. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief of Dude Letter.
I'm John.
Our defendant. And on panel tonight, we've got...
Jeremy.
Tom.
Matthew W. Quinn.
This is Daniel.
And Darth Jader.
So, we managed to sit through the phantasmagoric, Danny DeVito porn film, Batman.
It's disturbing just how accurate that is.
As centrally every black fluid dripped from his body.
And the world cringed.
And Catwoman licking her leather.
Oh, God.
No, pleather.
Oh, pleather.
With zippers. She was Frankenthong for a second there.
She was sort of the rag doll of this Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, we know what the Who's in Whoville were watching. Considering this movie only takes place on Christmas, it's like Grim Fandango, but on Christmas Day in some, like, dark corner of Tim Burton's, hump closet.
He has
several. One on each floor.
Yeah.
So before we get too creepy into Tim Burton-ness, John, how do you think this held up?
I think it held up all right. I'm glad to see that my childish self was not too far off base when I thought, this is a messed up movie.
Yes, sir.
That I knew it was kind of weird from the get-go, and it held up that end of the bargain fairly well. I still think it's a pretty solid movie, at least from the characters.
Yeah.
I think during the watching of it, we decided fairly early on that the plot is not its strong suit. But the characters, I think, were compelling enough in a Tim Burton kind of weird, creepy kind of way.
Let's leave it at that for now. As tradition, Daniel, will you give us a quick synopsis?
Sure, it's Frank Reynolds and that chick from that Coolio video fighting Batman. Okay.
Done! Alright, moving on!
There you have it.
If you want me to go on,
please!
It opens. Sure, it opens with the Cobblepots giving birth to some hideous bird boy. In this version, the Penguin isn't just this aristocratic short man, he actually is deformed. And they toss him into a sewer, and then 30 years later he reemerges and he wants to reclaim his birthright, whatever that means. Apparently it means he wants to find out who his parents is and then later become mayor. He's manipulated by this local businessman named Max Schreck, who is Christopher Walken at his Christopher Walkenest. But there's never a time when Christopher Walken isn't at his Christopher Walkenest. And along the way, Shrek's secretary gets pushed out of a window, and that secretary becomes Catwoman and decides she wants to kill Shrek.
Surprise!
Pretty much. So that's the conflict, and then these all go head-to-head in something that normally would be seen on pay-per-view, but instead we get it as a major motion picture.
And I want to emphasize, that's pretty much where the plot ends, because after that, there's no really driving force, because once it turns out that Cobblepot can't be mayor, which happens about 45 minutes before the end of this movie, it's just a matter of, it's a comedy of errors.
It enters the end game, doesn't it, where he's obviously trying to either destroy the city or kill everyone in it by turn, and failing miserably every which way.
Every which way but loose. So, speaking of another terrible movie.
That's next week.
Yeah.
Oh.
No. Next week, since this is series week, or series month, the next one is Jim Carrey, where you...
Ew.
Pulling a David Bowie, where you can see the outline of every genital bit as he dry humps the air across...
And yet still is less effeminate than David Bowie. Ooh. I'm not sure how he pulled that aside.
He actually wore the same suit that Danny DeVito did in this movie.
Minus all the extra pillows in his suit, he's pretty much good to go.
I want to say that I watched Good Morning America when this movie came out.
Oh my.
They were interviewing Danny DeVito, and he said most, if not all, of that fat was real.
I'm sure.
That's wildly unfortunate.
Yes.
They modeled his ass off Station from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Station.
On previous episodes of Myopia.
See, on episode 2 of Myopia. Let's back up.
So this is going to just be a podcast devoted to Danny DeVito's obesity. All right.
Okay, well, let's back up. Danny DeVito, this movie is a love story.
If I understand how movie structure works, we have a meet cute between him and Christopher Walken early on, and it's their the love. It's the rise and fall of their love affair.
It's the love that dare not speak its name.
Yeah,
we're
the one
believe that it's between Catwoman and Batman, but nay, it's between Christopher Walken and Danny DeVito.
It even gets spicy at the end when DeVito has him locked up in a bird cage.
Yes, sir.
Kinky.
I've got your slime below you.
He even takes out the toys with that little.
It's a real bird that cannot fly.
God damn. All right, we gotta get into this movie a little bit. So other than the most atrocious, like, child abuse scene in a movie in a long time.
Played for laughs.
The child strapped into the leather.
I don't know if it's played for laughs. This is a dark beginning.
You mean the opening sequence?
The cat was pure camp. I mean...
Yeah.
Are you kidding? That thing scared the crap out of me. As a kid, you're thinking, oh, there's a cat. Oh, he's going to play with a cat. No, he's going to dismember this cat.
But this is really foreshadowing. I mean, foreshadowing is the wrong term, but this is a scene out of Nightmare Before Christmas where, like, the fat ghostly kid just, like, dismembers a cat in that movie, too, which is Tim Burton produced, I was corrected earlier.
He did not direct.
He did not.
He produced.
Tim Burton is not a cat person. You've established that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although, apparently, Michelle Pfeiffer is.
Did anybody talk how long it took for Batman to actually show up in a movie called Batman Returns? It was a good 15
minutes. It wasn't even Batman,
he was
actually.
It.
Nick apparently, and I sort of...
Was.
We sort of sideways glanced on that because Nick was commenting on the fact that oh, okay, Michael Keaton literally just showed up about 15, 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
And I was like, nope. Not, it's Michael Keaton, but it's not even Batman. It's Bruce
Batman.
Wayne.
He apparently spends all the time between the first movie and this movie sitting brooding in his castle.
Yes.
Well, waiting for the bat signal to come on.
And not only does it come on, it appears in his house via a series of mirrors.
It's very Egyptian sort of tomb that way, because that's how they used to light up their... Their embalming areas was
right,
to reflect the sun down through the mirrors to, you know, reference the mummy. Yes.
More people who like cats.
Oh my. And we just tied it all together.
Nailed it.
How did we do that?
But for pure secrecy, he's got these mirrors hanging around, flashing it right into his house. What is he trying to do? Basically hide in plain sight?
Like, yeah. The most subtle
spoiler
criminal
alert
mind
at the end,
ever.
It turns out Bruce Wayne is Batman, too, in case anyone was confused.
What?
He rips his rubber mask off. That's never supposed... I had forgotten about this completely.
But he and Catwoman already knew who each other were at the party, so what was the point?
I don't think they did.
They quote their lines
to
each
other.
Yeah,
That was one of my favorite scenes in the movie because it was one of the few that was actually about Batman because of the follow-up when Max turned around and said, Bruce, why are you dressed up like Batman? That's like the whole point behind them. Nobody could ever guess Bruce Wayne is Batman.
And that actually does kind of raise the stakes a little because you realize, hey, he's not a good businessman.
You want to hear something cool?
Not really.
All right.
No, go ahead.
Well, originally, you know how Billy Dee Williams was in the first Batman?
As Harvey Dent.
As Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
Max Schreck was supposed to be Harvey Dent and Billy Dee Williams was supposed to come back, but they fired him or they wouldn't let him come
God
back.
Almighty.
So that kiss at the end where Max got electrocuted, that was supposed to turn him into Two-Face.
Oh,
that's deep.
That would have been that would have been awesome.
That was the sound of all of our
Billy
Dee minds
Williams
exploding.
Yeah. That would have been cool.
That would have been cool.
Sexy. That's what that would have been.
It would have been so.
If there's anything that could trump Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face, it's Billy Dee Williams.
Billy Dee showing up.
It's Lando
Calrissian style.
But that's an interesting point since we're going to watch that movie next. We got to talk about this. This is much campier than I remembered.
Yeah.
This is significant, and you know we think
it's still
of
not as
fiber.
It's still not as campy as the next film.
But
Noel Coward is as campy as the next film.
But it's pure cheese.
Well, Batman Forever. I know that we haven't gotten into it yet, but it goes back to the original campiness of Batman television version for campiness' sake. Whereas Batman Returns seemed to simply be campy. All on its own.
And then suffer from Tim Burton disease.
It's like they tried to make really pithy, deep meaning in what they were saying, and it just came out as just kind of, why?
You know, the disappointing thing about this film and the next one is they actually had an opportunity to get a good arc going. I mean, like, in the first one, at the end, Batman kills the Joker, or the man he believes who killed his parents. So it's like, okay, well, now what? He has to reestablish himself. And at this point, he really doesn't care, and that's why he was killing people left and right in this film. It kind of made sense. And then, you know, Forever was supposed to finally be him saying, okay, even if I have no personal stake, I still have to be Batman. But they blew it. They never focused really on Batman.
That's something they touched upon in this movie, but not really fleshed out, is that the Penguin and Batman share that similar aspect, that neither one of them really know their parents. And when Batman first sees the Penguin on TV, he says, huh, I really hope he finds his parents.
Then, yeah,
they have that connection, and it's never again mentioned.
A moment of humanity.
And yet he finds this connection with Catwoman and not a connection with the Penguin, despite the fact that they seem to have that stronger connection between their parents.
I feel like you spent... this movie is called, like, what is it, the Batman movie without Batman.
Yeah.
Like, frequently, and... It's not just that, it's the Batman movie without Bruce Wayne for a good portion of it as well, even though when Batman was there, it was Bruce Wayne, not Batman. But you didn't really get a chance to explore anything that of the fallout from the last movie. Like, it wasn't even touched upon, oh, I killed my parents' killer, so that's pretty much a weight off my mind, and just, you know, going around being Batman when it suited him, and that was it, just Bruce Wayne being Bruce Wayne. No real, like, I have a purpose, I have...
Well, Daniel made a good point about having could have had an arc. In Batman Forever, Bruce lectures Robin, saying once you kill the man who kills you killed your family, you just keep killing and killing, and then when does it stop? That, you know, Batman in this one kills a bunch of people in kind of ridiculous ways. Maybe at some point between the movies, he realized, you know, I really can't do this anymore.
Well, maybe they also just replaced him with another actor who had different...
That too.
I'm sorry, what?
A wooden plank, really.
It's someone different? No. What?
It's a cardboard cutout of a man with better hair.
Mentiroso.
Yeah.
So. But it is an interesting idea, though, because if this is Batman without Batman, it's because Batman is not an interesting character.
Yeah.
It's because you have this really
interesting story was told in the last movie.
Well, and it's a rocky world made by, and always people are trying to make it either less or more chaotic, right? You know, Cobblepot's going to try to take it over, Joker's trying to make it destroyed, you know, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, Batman's just there to restore the old order. That's not a compelling story, so you have to have compelling villains.
Yay, status quo.
I mean, but the whole Tim Burton, both of them really are not movies about... Exactly, they are not movies about Batman. They're movies about the villains, and then just Batman setting it right by the end, but it's really more of an exploration of these villains' characters and not Batman himself.
I would argue that that's what Batman became, certainly with the animated TV show. Mm. That is entirely about the villains, rather than... Batman himself. He is a means to the villains.
Well, I mean, in the animated series, they did strike a good balance between Batman and the villains. I mean, I remember several great ones where, like, I think there was this one where the villains, like, kidnap him and put him on trial for essentially causing their crimes, and eventually, I think they,
making them into monsters and then calling them one. Right.
Yeah, but he's found not guilty because, I think the lawyer that they kidnapped to defend him said, like, You
created him as much as he created you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why this movie is interesting, and then the next one falls apart to me. And we're not there yet, but the next one really is the Batman story. This one, Batman has a CD player where the spindle is the bat signal, and he DJs on
the
it
DJ
a little.
The DJ Jazzy Jeff station.
Because you can do that.
Wicked.
Yeah. CDs
it was so
technology.
Horrible. It's how horrible it was.
That was the only thing this movie was missing to, you know, basically take it from this movie to Forever was the cheesy sound effects that Forever really added to it.
There were a lot
also cod pieces.
There were a lot more Joel Schumacher-y lines though in this one than I remember there being.
Indeed,
there were, and it makes me realize that there wasn't that far of a step. As I had hoped.
A lot less neon, though, for which I was
That's
grateful.
True. The colors were basically black, less black.
Plaster.
A little less black and gray.
And Spinal Tap.
Reflective black.
Yes. None more black.
They cranked it up to 11 with the pleather and the leather, but can we just take a second to really appreciate the fact that, yes, the Penguin, he's his own terrible villain, but you have Catwoman, who's insane on her own level before she even becomes a villain. She walks into her own apartment. Honey, I'm home! Oh, I forgot. I'm not married, and has a sign, a neon sign that says, hello there, when she cranks up the electricity in her room and pulls her bed out of the closet, and it's just this sad, lonely existence.
And thank God a cat shows up, because otherwise she's just talking to herself in the most awkward way.
She's the epitome of a neurotic cat lady.
You know, that it makes perfect sense, because you have cats who are just plotting against the people who suppress them all day long, and that is absolutely her.
The sign only exists so she can smash the letters later so it reads hell here, but anyway.
That's a good reason to exist. It's a good reason to exist.
Are you claiming contrivance?
I am.
Movies don't do that, Daniel. They
never,
just don't.
Never.
The weird thing about it is the dynamic they were making, and I usually try to avoid this, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. That's the villains here are not at all like they are in the comics, and they work better in the comics because right. They actually do bring a lot more out. I mean, in the comics, like, the Penguin is just this other rich... He was part of a former rich family that the Waynes ruined, and so he's trying to get rid of Bruce Wayne, and he rebuilds his fortune through crime. So
there's a lot more substantial motivation for hating Bruce Wayne.
He would have fit in better with the Christopher Nolan Batman.
Well, Christopher Nolan wouldn't do that, but anyway, you got that dynamic about how easy it is for a person at the same socioeconomic status for an evil, and then Catwoman is another... A lot like Batman. She's not a superhero. She's just somebody with a lot of cool stuff.
She knows kung fu.
She got eaten by cats, and that was pretty much the source of her superpowers.
Yeah.
It was Spider-Man-esque in the sense, but none of the cats had superpowers.
That we know of.
That were aware they had back alley diseases.
Max Shrek, but other than that,
let's back up.
Byproduct.
Thank God, because in the other version, the Halle Berry version, they do have magic powers.
That was even worse.
That never happened.
That never happened.
That was an Inception type dream that you had, Nicholas, that you're just, you know, just quasi remembering right now.
I think I remember reading about it, but the backlash was so heavy against that casting they canceled it. But anyway,
erotic thriller.
Catwoman in the comics targets the same villains that Batman's targeting, but just through different means.
And to rob them for different ends. To different ends.
So again, it's that same sort of foil that of what Batman could turn into, and that would have helped a lot if they kept those characteristics in the movie, and they didn't.
Instead, I think the only reason Catwoman was there was for some sort of misogynistic, very sexist kind of lines, and like the Penguin in particular was like everything he said was all about sex, all about
it wasn't even like an
molestation,
it was,
and it's just like sex,
it was
sex,
not
sex,
subtle,
sex.
Yeah,
I feel like Bill Lumberg, but I'm going to go ahead and do this. Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree with you there.
By all means,
because
you're wrong, but by all means.
Yeah.
Well, when this came out, I recall it being actually considered fairly progressive in the way it depicted Catwoman, and I mean, in terms of the Penguin being sexist,
really,
he was the villain. Yeah,
so she's a neurotic Catwoman.
Who's also
who
a secretary.
Who is a secretary slash executive.
I would have liked to see her, like, rob something. I would have liked
she
to
listens
see,
to voicemails that say, your boss is going to keep you late after work for a candlelit dinner
perfume.
For two.
And she deletes them immediately when she hears
them. Well, yeah, he just threw her
the
out of a window.
Both times,
remember?
Well, she also deleted her mother.
The first time.
Well, I mean, but that's the whole thing. It's you know,
she leads a solitary life.
This movie's 22 years old. So
she's only happy when she's around Bruce Wayne.
How old am I?
She needs a guy.
She's rebelling against the sexist order by deleting those emails and blowing up Shrek's office.
Whoa.
By dressing in a leather
suit. Sorry, voicemail, whatever.
And I think the thing is with Catwoman in particular is that instead of her being this Anne Hathaway slick, complete robber, which we can totally buy in 2013, whenever the last...
2012.
Nolan, 2012, thank you, Daniel. The last Nolan movie came out for Batman. This was so not the case in the 80s / early 90s. It was a big deal for Michelle Pfeiffer to save a woman from being raped in the middle of an alley and beat up a man. It was just this dramatic gesture. And then the woman who thanks her for saving her from the rape case was like, oh my goodness, thank you. And she even pins that woman up and says, no, you made it too easy for him. And that... That's where her true psychoses come in, because you're just like, oh, she hates everybody. She's not just trying to defend the female race. She's plum cat crazy.
I don't think the characters had to be insane. I mean, that's Tim Burton. We were going to get crazy villains. That was just coming.
Yeah. But well, yeah.
The fact of the matter is it could have worked just as well to have Penguin going with the traditional Penguin, as you said, going that, you know, him being somebody who fell out of the rich family and was trying to build his way back up through crime, and then her being someone that just, you know, fell into this life and had some of those psychoses going still, you know, you made it too easy, because she would be like that even in the comic. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, you know, we had Tim Burton going, yeah, let's just make him crazy and go from there.
Well, it's a very Tim Burton
I was sympathetic with it for the Penguin until he started being obnoxious. Like, he was born deformed, his parents throw him in a river. He was basically raised in a sewer by penguins.
So 10 yeah, minutes we need to get through him.
Penguins underneath the city of New York.
Well, the sewer might have gone to the zoo
in the
somehow.
Zoo.
He was a free
yeah, he was in the zoo.
Somehow the sewer connects to the zoo.
He joined the circus.
The red tent gang.
Red triangle.
Red triangle pet, yeah.
And the penguin became deformed, whereas the penguins, nothing ever happened to them. They just kept on swimming happily through the sewer.
But as far as it goes, he's the only character really with an arc.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's an interesting arc.
Yeah.
And so we should talk just a little bit about him, because he is a huge Batman villain.
I think we should talk a lot
emphasis
about him.
On huge.
He is the point of this movie.
He's like five.
Well, but he's also one that
he's
you can
the
argue
biggest, small
just like
villain.
With the Joker, because he is one of the cornerstone villains of the Batman, you know, world, just like Catwoman. But since he's the star of the movie, he gets full billing here.
Absolutely.
And for Danny DeVito, he doesn't show up in a lot of movies, and I think he does a good job here. So how do we look at this kind of growth of Penguin? Because we do have the most horrifying scene possibly in a movie I've seen for this show yet.
Which is, just to illustrate for the listeners,
when we see this kind of birthing scene where, you know, the father's pacing the hallway, a doctor comes out shocked, we hear a scream, and then the next scene we see is a baby locked in a cage.
Yeah, it's
on
not,
Christmas.
It's like a playpen.
On Christmas.
Yeah.
On Christmas, the parents are drinking martinis, and you see this baby in a playpen that's hovered above the ground and is closed over the top, which is, everyone knows, you know, D-Fax is coming for you at that point, but then the cat sort of snuffles up to the bars of the playpen and then gets yanked violently into the playpen, and you know that there's something wrong with this child.
And the mother then finishes her martini, and
just
they look
like,
at
ain't
each
no
other.
Thing.
Both of
this
them
child.
Finish their martini.
At the same time, they're like, well, time to leave the baby in a river.
We
so they take a bassinet, and they dump it in a freaking green river.
And it floats!
I honestly thought the most horrifying thing was the fact his dad was Pee Wee Herman. I mean, that's scary enough, wouldn't it?
With a monocle.
Yeah. Monocle.
It goes back to what you were saying. It sort of follows that comic book-esque story of the fact that he was clearly from the higher class, but in this particular story, Tim Burton or otherwise decision made, he gets dumped into a river of sewer.
They made him a freak.
Yes.
In order for him to be the outsider that creates him as the villain.
Well,
yes.
And I pointed this out while we were watching it. This movie has actually two sets of parallel construction, because Bruce Wayne and Cobblepot are supposed to be about the same age. They're both abandoned by their parents through different means, but still, they grow up on their own, and you have two very different versions of what could be the same. And that's why, in the end, Cobblepot is this kind of millionaire type. In the other world, they fight each other because they're enemies.
Right.
In this world, it's much more of, this is what it could have been. But we also have this image of Catwoman being saved by cats the same way he was saved by the penguins and raised.
Saved or eaten by cats, because from the visual that was provided, it was pretty disgusting.
Well,
it's very bizarre. Well, having a cat chew on your finger might wake you up a bit.
Yeah, and until it's bloodied.
There, at one point, one of our viewers was saying, did they put kibble in Michelle Pfeiffer's mouth to make that cat just chew on her mouth that way? It was relatively disturbing, to say the least.
Gross.
She was brought back to life in a Peter Parker-esque way, just super, super more disturbing than that.
As the cat lovingly nuzzles your forefinger.
With its teeth.
While drilling its teeth in your fingers.
Nom.
And she does develop a magic ability to turn a leather coat into a gimp outfit.
And to turn a
whip
into a deadly, deadly weapon against all guns and whatever other manufactured weapons we have.
And mostly sometimes men, though. We notice that
feminist third wave hero. Yeah,
we got absolutely. No matter what gun a man is wielding, Catwoman can whip it out of his hand. So she does.
So it's a castration metaphor?
It is.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Surely not.
There was plenty of Freudian imagery in this movie, especially with the
women
shrinking Batmobile into a very narrow.
Yes, this is the already phallic Batmobile from Burton gets even more circumcised
the
in this movie.
The gay duo.
No, save that for Batman and Robin, Jane.
Oh, I'm sorry. You mean with
the bat nipples and the cod pieces?
Did,
yeah.
Robin hang off that dildo rocket?
Oh, God.
Oh.
And I'll be leaving the podcast forever at this point. I'll have a great night.
There's a rocket in his pocket. What?
I noticed when Catwoman is clawing at Bruce Wayne, it looks like he has a bat six-pack, like some kind of like window slats on his abs.
He does.
Well, if a woman is going to stick a piece of metal in your abdomen, you have to be flexing. That's the only way it can be manly that you're going to get stabbed by cat nails.
And to be fair, it might be the only thing on that entire outfit that flexes, because we watched him try to fight in this
movie.
And
he just owl-like, just kind of rotated around, which foreshadows to, I know it's silly, but foreshadows to the whole Chris Nolan concept of Alfred, I need
to
armor that will help me maneuver. What's attacking you, Mr. Wayne? Cat. Penguins, it doesn't matter. I have to turn at an owl-like angle just to get any sort of visual on people who are attacking me.
That was the whole point of that line, was mocking the previous movies with the headgears that didn't turn.
And us of 2014, with the hindsight being 2020 that it is, we can totally see that. We are the Wizards of Oz, and we know that that's happening, but goodness.
No, it's funny because the Turtles in the 90s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie had more movement
had
than he
issue,
had.
Yeah.
Because he's like, in order to make him look like he's fighting, people have to jump at him, and he has to duck out of the way, and that happens isn't he'll lean forward so explosions
the
can happen
360 motions of just like 2D animation of him bending forward and standing up and bending forward another way, but he just does not have that flexibility,
so the bend and the snap basically
that's what it
and
is
that's also foreshadowing. We don't know about that yet. Reese Witherspoon does not exist on the movie set yet. You've just ruined.
She
you've
didn't
just,
have bat
Doctor
nipples.
Who. You broke the Doctor Who law. That's what happened.
My apologies.
Someone was wiggly wobbly.
We haven't really covered, I guess, the plot structure, have we?
What about
the plot?
Shrek? What do we think about Shrek? Because he was sort of the oddball.
Christopher Walken, I'm like the head of Gotham City at this point. You're talking to me all wrong. It's the wrong tone.
So we're doing a bad accent.
Oh, yeah, we're really good at that.
This is terrible.
Because I need some more cowbell.
Oh, God damn it.
They don't know about that either. Oh, but we're all doing that now. We're just foreshadowing all over the place.
No, the cowbell thing. Copyright myopia 2014. I don't know what you're talking about.
The Doctor Who protection law, where no one sees the foreshadowing.
Anybody remember the Continental?
Oh my.
No.
Champagne?
Yes, Champagne. I like the aromatherapy. This is cinnamon. And this? Oh! This is chloroform.
Does this smell like chloroform to you?
He plays a similar character in this movie, though.
Yeah, he does.
He plays the sleazeball. He plays the businessman who knows no limits.
Well, and again, that was the joke at the top. He's a Bond villain. He plays a very
good
Bond villain.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you expect him to have a henchman, which he needed desperately in this movie.
In a movie like this, where a character like the Penguin is a more down-to-earth character than the businessman Max Schreck, I don't know.
Especially when Max Schreck's son sounds like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Father, there's something going on in the square. And you just you don't know where this family is coming from.
As a side note, that actor needed to decide if he was going to do a walk-in impression the whole time or not, because it went in and out.
That first line was so Schwarzenegger, but from then on out, he was like, oh, Father, I don't know what's going on.
I don't want to go with the Penguin.
Not sure what's happening right now. When he had more of the walk-in voice, for sure, later, but...
The weird thing is, Schreck was actually the only one they tried to ground in reality, because all those suits, those are J.P. Morgan suits.
I'm deaf, actually, because of those suits. It was a surprising, consequence of that.
Okay. I think that does tie into, they did a good job of establishing Gotham as the pseudo 1930s noir type.
It's a Fritz Lang movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And yet still maintaining that modern technology, which the animated series just took to another level.
Yeah, yeah, it has this great kind of neo-gothic feel. It's very dark and gritty. Everyone's wearing black and white, and the colors are very stark and in between.
Except the Ice Princess, who's wearing not really much beyond that.
Sparkles.
Sparkles
and a smile.
Yep.
And there are some villains walking through Gotham City with Pomeranians or equally tiny dogs with bombs strapped to their backs, and they can walk into a shop, somehow shrug off the bomb, and walk away.
And Rocket
clean
Penguins.
Clean and simple.
And Rocket Penguins.
Yes, Rocket Penguins. Were, I think...
I got dibs on that band name.
Next from Miramax, the Rocket Penguins of Madagascar.
And a child kidnapping train that's driving through the streets and nobody seems to notice it.
They're all
at the party.
It's another Batman issue where the cops only seem to be chasing Batman.
Yeah.
And the criminals get to just kind of run around as they wish.
You had two dozen cops chasing Batman after he allegedly threw the princess off the building.
But
you had another dozen following the Penguin after he shot at the crowd. And yet a train full of crying children breaking into people's buildings.
Going walking speed.
Yeah, walking speed.
Yeah,
is
like
apparently...
Yeah, it's like the mall train with the kids in it.
Exactly.
Especially considering the fact that Commissioner Gordon summoned Batman to begin with, and the cops are still chasing after him, which, depending on the Batman universe you're in at any given time, I know that the bat signal is only for Commissioner Gordon and Batman, but at some point you have to assume that the police force is at least on the same page as their commissioner. And in this one, it never distinguishes Commissioner Gordon. You see him once.
Twice. In the beginning, when he says the sign up, and then when the Ice Princess falls.
And this is the third Pat Hingle movie we've done, and he's been less useful in each one.
And he's a bumbling incompetent. Like, he's just kind of like, you know, flustering around, can't do his job, basically relies on Batman for everything.
That's why Sirius Black showed up and just had to usurp him. He said, I'm on the run from Azkaban, and this is the role that I'm going to take in the meantime. This is my witness protection role.
I sure hope Batman shows up quickly. I let off the police go off for the evening.
For all of you not in the know, that was Droopy Dog as Commissioner Gordon, played by Nicholas Hoffman.
Yeah,
I think it sounds a little bit like Pat Hingle. Oh boy, I hope Batman comes back. Every police force is on holiday this weekend.
Otherwise, there will be no one to rip off Catwoman's ill-stitched suit.
So we basically established all the supporting characters are useless in this movie.
Well, quite a lot of characters are useless.
Okay, wait, who's useful in this movie? Let's break it down to that, because that's probably a much shorter list.
Alfred. Thank you, sir. And he provides
which is why the third one is all the worst, because Tommy Lee Jones, with a kid mask, kicks him in the kidneys and essentially kills him.
Really?
We're flash-forwarding, but
Oh, I don't remember.
But that's next.
That's the next one.
That
didn't exist.
Michael Goh? Is that...
Michael Goh, yes.
Goh?
Or Goff, depending on, you know... Oh, my.
Go,
depending
Alfred.
On which country from
is
which
is it Van Gogh or Van Gogh?
I think he's English.
Van Gogh, well, get the heck out of here.
Van Goggins.
For the G-rated listeners listening.
Why are you still here?
Obviously, we didn't invite your babies to this episode.
We've wandered way away from this movie.
We never do that.
I think that's a sign, though. I mean, it seems like nothing really happened in this movie.
Well,
because there was no Batman in this movie.
Shrek tries to manipulate the Penguin to becoming the mayor of Gotham so he can build a power plant that steals.
And then he runs into a donkey, and then they save the princess. We know what happens in Shrek.
So he can build a power plant that steals power from buildings rather than powering them, which I'm not really sure what the point is.
No one will notice.
How that would work.
Yeah.
Or what
the point of it is, or
that
how it makes
gets, like,
this power plant will be my legacy.
Because there's no way it would be embroiled in lawsuits or anything like that from the city, because surely no one would know when all their power is being drained as soon as this power plant comes online.
And what that even means. What does that mean?
Yeah, how do you drain power?
And then where do you store it and sell it, or do you throw it in people? I am power!
Maybe he was storing it and selling it. It's like a Ponzi scheme of electricity.
Enron!
They trade.
Whoa.
But wow. What if the Gotham citizens got together to clean up the oil like they did down in the Gulf Coast?
Problem. They only pretended to have it.
So, you know, if people had watched this closer, we could have prevented Enron, I think is what.
If we had watched it closer, we might be able to determine still what the movie was actually about. Because it was still about haven't really nothing. Hit on that.
It was about a perverted fat man macking on a woman in leather.
So,
Michael Keaton is a little chunkier in this movie, but I don't think it's fair to call him a perverted fat man.
So it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is what you're talking about.
So it's basically Andy Sauer. And I'm in Mr. Slux's dungeon. Is that what you're saying?
You're telling way too much about yourself right now.
So you guys are defender. How do you feel about guys it? Hitting on the dominatrixes? Oh my! I don't even have to go in. No. It's just happening right in
the
line.
But the plot stops. Like, what is it? When Cobblepot stops running for mayor, when it completely gets ruined, the plot kind of just grinds to a screeching halt, and then things happen after that point.
Yeah.
And there's really no plot resolution. There's no climax. There's no resolution to this other than, you know, people die.
It becomes a sketch comedy movie where there's
and
set pieces.
And it also
pieces.
Becomes this sort of, I guess we got to fill a few more minutes. This really should be, because in the other Batman stories, Batman is this noble character who is not Bruce Wayne. It's like, okay, Bruce Wayne is subject to love, subject to lust, subject to all of these amorous human...
in a story where he tried to frame Bruce Wayne for murder so he could get rid of Bruce Wayne's personality altogether.
Yeah. And that makes sense. Like, in this... But they sort of segue after this whole plot of the movie really being about the Penguin and his search for his parents. He finds them in less than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Settles the roses, settles his whole vendetta against his parents, but then decides that his vendetta is against the city.
Yes.
Becomes against the city, becomes against Shrek, because there are too many turning cards in this movie. And then, at the very last minute, it is literally Bruce Wayne is in love with Catwoman. And he decides to give up, like, he says, Catwoman, come back with me to Bruce Manor.
Yeah.
We're two sides of the same coin. We can be together. I don't know if he called it Bruce Manor. I had lost
my
attention span by that.
Pants.
It's hard for me to do, but I didn't even know what this movie was about by
no,
the
but,
end of it.
But you're absolutely right. Like, the problem is, first of all, they never know what to do with Catwoman. Because
there's very
even
little
in Bruce
segue, yeah.
But even in the Chris Nolan Batman, the first time she blows him off, he goes, so that's what that feels like, which is the dumbest line in Batman history. But you're right. Bruce Wayne is supposed to be about duality. In this, it's always Bruce Wayne. Even when he's Batman, it's still Bruce Wayne. And and to the point where he tears his mask off, and you reveal, guess what? I'm still Bruce Wayne.
It was him trying to... Well, that's the whole thing about the arc that they try to abandon. It was Bruce Wayne trying to abandon Batman because he didn't feel he needed it anymore. But,
it happened with Vicki Vale, too, but the difference is, there's no reason for him to do it at that moment. Zero.
No,
none.
Especially with
there's
other
no chance
witnesses.
That he could, and there's no chance that he could save her. There's no salvation to it. There's no, I'm getting something off my chest. No, it's just, guess what? This is actually a tearaway pair of pants.
No, I agree.
It was very, you know, Harlem Globetrotters, Globetrotters, as you were saying, were just tear away the pants. And even with
and
Catwoman,
the magic comes
her
out.
Exit was almost, after this, they really tried this female empowerment segment with Catwoman where she's like, no, I'm going to save you from being raped in an alleyway, woman. And then she turns on the woman, so that defeats the whole purpose of that. And then at the end, where she's like, I have 9 lives, and she's counting down her lives every time somebody tries to kill her and it doesn't succeed. And she's like, I'm down to 2 lives, and damn it, if it's not going to last till Christmas. So she has 1 left, because she wastes 1 of the 2 remaining on
Shrek.
Tases herself in the mouth as she kisses Shrek, and they both presumably die, but then the last person you see as the credits roll is Catwoman.
But that's
so
why
dramatic.
It's called Catwoman Returns. But while we're here, we should also talk about the end of everyone's story, because it wraps up. And again, Penguin's the hero here, because he's the one who actually has a storyline. He rises up from nothing. Now, I think Matt was the one who pointed this out. His third act is insane, because he goes from running for mayor to clean up the town, being manipulated by Shrek, presumably because Shrek's taking advantage of him.
Everybody likes parfait.
And then he just turns to try to kill... He pulls the full Moses, going from being floated down the river, rescued by penguins, as Moses was, right?
Which Bible are you reading, really? Sir?
I want this penguins. Bible.
And it was said on the eighth day of floating, he sailed upon the Antarctic.
The penguins in Egypt.
Yeah, the and then the wolves saved Mowgli in the
African
jungle.
African penguins. Racist. But then he kills the firstborn of everyone thanks to his... Okay, so I imagine, just like, you know, in spring training, you have the combine for football, right? So there's the combine for just henchmen. And then they each end up like, well, this year I'm going to, I guess, be for the Sandman, and I'm going to be for Two-Face. These were all of the Joker's henchmen, and they ended up in the Penguin camp, because these are clowns and circus, like, and jugglers.
I was confused by that as well.
Yeah, again... So the guys who work for Mr. Freeze are just still in the background like, oh boy, my ice skates are coming. Oh. Next movie, guys.
I imagine there's a very limited job market for henchmen. Especially clown henchmen.
The Lupin proletariat should never rise up!
Dark Knight proves that, no, it's not that much a limited market. Plenty of people signing up for that gig.
Because it makes them money.
Not for long. But
it made
does
for
make
good
them...
visuals, though.
It did. And
the opening scene where they run into the town square, and you've got the fire breathing demon guy. You've got the guys on stilts tossing around.
The lady with
fire
the Pomeranian.
And as a side note,
dog.
The way Bruce Wayne figures out that scene
guys is
the stupidest scene in this movie. And he's reading a newspaper on a screen and saying, "Huh, there was a penguin boy in the circus. I'll bet that the penguin is from the same circus." And he brings it up! He brings it up in casual conversation with the penguin!
Sherlockian type detective style.
Yeah, he's correct.
The world's greatest detective. I mean, he's good at that sort of thing.
Nay, that's Benedict Cumberbatch.
And then I was going to say, and then Catwoman gets into his Cumberpatch. Yeah.
How dare you, sir? But yeah, it really seems like this movie
that
never
was a
really
visual
lands
gag
in one...
Yeah.
Honest direction.
Well, it's like they had a good idea with the penguin that, hey, let's make a gritty kind of sympathetic villain, and then let's just slap Batman on there. Let's add another villain because we need to up the ante from the Joker, and let's just pretend there's a plot.
And it was a bit slapdash, yeah.
I think it would have been better if they just focused on Batman versus Catwoman, because I think that the foil...
Or Batman and the Penguin, you know? This trend of having multiple villains, I don't think works, even in the Nolan ones. I don't think it really works.
I think
because Catwoman, no matter what universe you're in, seems to be rushing between individual villains slash heroes. She's like, oh, well, Batman
while
needs me
sexy
over here. Then the Penguin needs me over here, and the Joker slash whomever needs me over here. She's always rushing between, so she's never really an honest-to-goodness villain.
I mean, be thankful at least that they didn't make her like the more classic and tired trope of the she's a strong, independent woman. At least we skip that, you know, horrible, you know, just try.
Well, and you give her, you color in the gray.
Yes, it wasn't just some simple thing, but I think one of the problems of this movie had was that in the first Batman, you know, they let Tim Burton direct it, but the studio held a lot of control over that and controlled the direction of the movie and all of that, even with him directing. In this
Which
one,
is
they...
why you end up with Prince doing the soundtrack.
Yes.
No,
then in this one, they just said, oh, well, you just made us a boatload of money, so, you know, have fun. And I think this could have used a little bit more direction in its production.
Still made a boatload of money.
But it suffers from Tim Burton disease, which is pretty but no plot.
It made money because the first one made money and people went and saw this one and we didn't have the internet for people to comment the way they do now.
I don't know. Like, the reason I haven't really chimed in because I'm trying to think of anything of significance in this. When it all comes down to it is the villain is running for mayor. Who cares?
Yeah, and this is Bob Roberts, right?
Like, and then you've got the other villain, Catwoman. her big plan is to get revenge on the guy who killed her. That's pretty reasonable.
But not in any way saying that it's ahead of its time, because it's definitely not.
Nothing.
However, going back to the whole Catwoman saving the other lady from the rape scene, but then becoming this whole ultra version of herself where she's like, actually, you should be better than this. Like, I shouldn't have to rescue you. You shouldn't make it so easy that Batman should have to come and get you when you're in trouble. screw you, so to speak. And it, I well, thought I that...
Mean, that not- goes back to, you know, Commissioner Gordon saying, hey, we need Batman. I think because of Batman, everyone's just relying on him instead of doing their own jobs, that kind of thing.
Well, maybe it's some tie-in with this, in the beginning when she was leaving the office, Batman had to save her from the taser guy.
Oh, yeah.
And so it, maybe she kind of beating herself up over that.
And there's this obvious
she's the quintessential I have no power.
Right.
Her entire life is based around that.
Especially when you go back to the comment of, hi, honey, I'm home. Oh, I forgot. I'm not married. And it's so tired and just bitter sounding, but then she becomes this empowered woman who can literally bring Batman to his knees with her whip, and all this
no, and
super
as someone,
feminine power, but it doesn't result in anything. She still is just like, no, Bruce, I don't want to be with you. I'm still going to sacrifice one of my 9 cat lives to destroy the lives of a man who made me feel less than a woman. It's
someone
depressing.
Who had to sit through the new Sin City.
Hey, now.
Oh, you poor thing.
You
some of us enjoyed that.
That.
None of us at this table.
The first
but
one.
But some
the
of us enjoyed
that.
He said new.
The new one. The new one. The second one. The one that just came out.
Oh, I saw it. I didn't enjoy it.
Oh, that's different.
No, I didn't enjoy it. But at least there you get the idea of a woman antagonist, yeah. Right?
Yes.
Because, like, that's what you needed. Rather than just come in and go, oh, I'm alone again, like some drunk Lindsay Lohan, you almost wanted her to grab a bottle of wine off the table that was already there. Because then at least you're like, she feels something. This is almost like a passive-aggressive teenager talking to herself in the hallway.
Well, because even the voicemails milk. That are left for Catwoman.
No, she left voicemails of herself reminding her she should have done better work.
Not even that. Like, we're talking about literally... Okay, yes. Let's go back to the fact that Catwoman leaves voicemails for herself. Hey, present self, I know that past self failed, so you're going to have to go all the way back to the office to go and get the Wayne files like you were supposed to remember earlier. Let's forget that for a second. The voicemails that really characterize her are from her mother. Oh, I love how you're just living all hoity-toity, living as a secretary in Gotham. What are you really proving by that? And then there's this, you know, perfume commercial that's pretty much appearing on a voicemail, which...
From her own employer.
Yes, from her own employer. Oh, make sure your boss makes sure you stay after work tonight. And
this was before the internet, so they had to leave voicemails.
Right.
Yeah.
Wait, voicemails?
And before sexual harassment.
Not voicemails, voice messages.
And before sexual harassment was a thing.
Yes, and it
apparently,
just,
yeah.
Those characterized her whole thing, like, before she even walked in, but she managed to do that with the, oh, honey, I'm home.
As a
and
side
she's
note.
Bitter at the fact that she's not married. It just, it's...
Now, the
and
only
she always calls
person.
Herself a corn dog.
Yeah, a dog.
That was weird.
Dumb corn dog.
But I will say the best part of her crazy scene is the chair covered in stuffed animals.
Yeah.
Because then when she, like, grows up, she shreds them.
Into the garbage disposal.
And just very, so easily.
That is a very Tim Burton scene because the the feathers
the
are flying everywhere. And the cat is just indifferent to the fluff, which is
no, there are cats at that point gathering
and
because
staring.
They've already eaten her
well,
face
and,
off.
And there's
and
one in the window
so,
watching
yeah.
the fluff, and it's just like,
yes, minion, you're doing my bidding.
I like how both of the bad guys in this do have minions. One's cats and one are penguins.
And others are clowns for no particular reason.
That's what this movie needed. A face-off between the cats and penguins. And the
oh,
that would
have been amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Where is the Braveheart
no.
penguin
yes.
in blue?
Where's
freedom!
The...
I'm the cat to free
and they have
penguins
water guns
me.
And the penguins have fish and they're distracting each other. It's awesome.
New meme.
With the bats
cats versus penguins.
Cats versus done.
And then Batman stands up between Batman. You know, Batman.
Yes.
Chuck
yeah.
Batman from
not
accounting.
Not to be accused with...
Yes.
And he
know.
Stands between them, and he throws his bats and says, if we are to be united, we must join together against the clown people.
I came to join the cats to free the fish from the penguinish...
Penguin
under the penguinish rule of the cats.
And that's why Scotland lost independence.
Too soon.
Ooh, so much
so
political debate going on right
take
now.
Take that, Scotty McScott. I forget the guy leading the charge.
Salmon.
He was in a bar when
salmon.
He made
that's
a statement.
Right. Yeah.
That's all I need to know.
And he wasn't wearing underwear at the time.
Ah. You can't wear those
was
with
he wearing
kilts,
a kilt?
Lottie.
He best have been.
He must have been.
He must
yeah.
have been.
Sure.
So,
where were we?
Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time.
Despite the fact that we never really covered the plot because there wasn't one, to be absolutely clear.
That's why I like doing Tim Burton movies. We're good.
I don't know. Sleepy Hollow was pretty perfect, which is why,
Shrek. Which is why it's one of the highest reviewed movies we've done.
God. To be fair, he had a plot already written for him.
And the honest to God truth is that Johnny Depp was in that movie, so it was going to be 50% better than any other movie he's ever made. And I'm just, I don't love Johnny Depp. No one knows that. What?
What? Robert Downey Jr. is going to get
I have one word.
Oh, you don't know me.
Tonto.
Yeah, that was back when I had
No. You come.
Although I will say Johnny Depp is a star of my favorite movie too, but it's not his movie. It's a Terry Gilliam film. I love Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Fair enough. Anything with Hunter Thompson involved, Johnny Depp is. People think that
great.
Wow, we're talking
about the movie anymore.
Yeah, we're way off.
Yeah,
but Tim Burton gets involved, and people think that that's Johnny Depp's big, thing.
Well, and I mean again. He works well with an aesthetic, and you couldn't have anyone else direct it and get that gritty, the dripping black from the penguin's mouth.
Like, slash green, slash red.
Whatever it was.
Whatever color it was at any given time.
Or those, like, muscular metal statues next to the Christmas tree pulling the lever for whatever reason.
Oh,
like,
God.
And some of them were crying. They were, like, crying into their hands.
Like the weeping angels.
Or even where when you have scenes with Michelle Pfeiffer as, you know, crying for no reason. Like, that is a Tim Burton cry. Like, he did. She's a supermodel. And the problem with, like, let's say, like, a nerd comedy, boob comedy, college comedy is the ugly chick that has to go to prom is really a beautiful woman. She just has mussed up hair and glasses.
And she has to take the glasses off to be pretty.
And then let her hair down and just toss it. But with this, they messed with Michelle Pfeiffer's face. They gave her yellow teeth the entire movie. Even when she's Catwoman, she has those yellow teeth.
It's pretty bad.
And they give her the frizzy hair, and they give her the makeup that messes up her cheekbones. That, like, they actually mess her up.
Mm-hmm.
I give him credit for that aesthetic, because it's a Tim Burton-y aesthetic there. But we are out of time. So, with John going last, why don't we go around the table this way and defend, or should people watch this movie, Darth?
I don't say this movie stands up simply because when you look at it as an adult, there's not a segmented amount of plot between each character. It's this story, then this story, then that story. I love it, and I think that people should definitely watch it just to see the progression of Batman and how he became the Batman that he is in the Chris Nolan universe and whatever universe you end up in now. But it does not stand up as a singularity of a film, unfortunately.
Do you?
I have about the same reaction I did when I first saw it. And I saw it long after I was a child because I was like 4 or 5 when this movie originally came out, so I didn't have that connection with it then. But people kept saying, oh, this is a much better movie than the first Batman. This is one of the best sequels ever. It's not. I mean, it tries to do too much. It's trying as much as... It's Tim Burton trying to do things with pre-established characters where the pre-established characters don't fit into what he's trying to do. He was given free rein, but I'm not sure how much of a mistake that was. And the fact that we spent most of the time making fun of Christopher Walken's voice rather than talking about, like, some of the other political statements that other Burton films have made, it just demonstrates how much this film really doesn't hold up. I think, honestly, at this viewing, it held up even less than it did when I first saw it. And I know Batman movies can get much, 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 much worse. But still, this one's got some flaws that prevents it from really giving me a whole recommendation.
Thanks, Quarter Critic. Fisher Quinn.
Don't bother.
Oh, snap.
The guy who recommended Spawn said that. So.
Oh!
And the guy who gave Hook 5.5 out of 10.
Hey, now, I was the defender of Hook. I will defend
I would agree with you. You should read my review.
There are some good bits in this movie, but it just was meh.
Well, no, that's what we want to hear.
Yeah.
I think
tell us then, man.
Okay, I like the Penguin as a villain. I like Catwoman as a villain. And there was some in, but I mean, this completely nonsensical villain plot that have the Penguin try to do after his bid for mayor implodes. I mean, running this hobo who saves the mayor's kid for mayor as part of some scheme to build a power plant, it just got weird.
Totally agree. Yeah. Thank you. Sir?
I don't know. Like, I love, like, 80s action movie cheese, and this one, while coming into the 90s, still held that wonderful Christmas action movie cheese that I absolutely adore. This is kind of a toss-up for me. I mean, if you enjoy that movie, watch this movie. Go for it. Enjoy it. And revel in it, because it will let you revel in it. But I don't know if that's not your forte. This is not a movie to go, you know, tromping through, because it just leaves so much to be desired.
Like, get lost in the quagmire of random plots.
Jeremy,
If you want to watch a movie about a villain who wants to steal energy and get political power, just watch Chinatown. You don't need to watch this.
No,
very well put.
And lastly, I think the reason I liked this as a kid was I wasn't knowledgeable enough to understand that Danny DeVito was talking about manipulating a woman with his flipper.
Now, most importantly, Mr. Copsey, what do you think?
As a character study on someone like the Penguin, it's a pretty good movie. Plot-wise, obviously, it leaves something to be desired, but I think, like I said earlier, they basically had this idea, let's make someone like the Penguin, and let's build a movie around that. Oh, hey, it happens to star Batman, who's in it for all of maybe 15 minutes.
Total.
That it's, you know, it's still a good movie, and I'll still love it for five simple words. Batman Returns, the video game.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Super Nintendo, quintessential action game.
Sure.
And like I said in the introduction, this holds all sorts of memories for me, and it's still a fun Christmas movie. But yeah, it's not a plot Oscar winning sort of movie.
Before I close out my review, I want you guys to listen in. If you're liking this, what we do, if you like what we do, please follow us on iTunes. Go to myopia.dudeletter.com to follow us there. And if you like us, please review us on iTunes, on Stitcher, however you get it, and share us through Facebook. Because guess what, guys? We're over, by the time this comes out, over 1,000 listens and 1,000 listeners. We're a huge deal, because the only other podcast that comes out of Atlanta is done by a company, done by Discovery Channel. So,
wow.
And they do good stuff, but we're a small group of people gathered around my dining room table, so please. But to close out myself, I'd like to say my story for this, and all of us have seen this movie. Some people said they weren't allowed in because their parents saw some graphic review. But in 1995 in Atlanta, we had something called the Storm of the Century. And the Storm of the Century was when we got a whole 5.5 inches of snow. And it shut down everything.
Aww.
It shut down everything like a backing up toilet.
You Southerners.
It was Hothglyphs before Hothglyphs ever happened.
Yeah. I remember my old neighborhood, we had a neighbor who was a few years older who would babysit us, and she was going skiing down the hill our neighborhood is on. But we knew the storm was coming. My dad was out of town, and so my mom rented a couple movies before the storm hit. And so we watched the first Batman together, all in the den with a fireplace and a Domino's pizza, as you will. And then midway through Batman Returns, we lost power. And so we're all huddled in the basement in sleeping bags to keep warm. And then at 3 in the morning when power's restored, we just hear the from the Penguin as it scares the ever-loving shit at us at 3 in the morning. And since then, I may have seen the movie once or twice ever. And that was when it was so... When my brother John, who was on the Goofy Movie episode, was so young, he was still in diapers, went out in the snow, and eventually caught a flu. And it was adorable, but sad. But seeing it again, I realize it's a tragic Batman case Not that it's a bad movie. It's just that it's a movie where they have Batman and don't know what to do with any of the characters. If this was, say, a Coen Brothers movie, you have well-defined characters and throw them together to see what happens.
This seems like a whole new discussion. I'm very excited about it.
The movie turns out being where you have interesting plot lines, but none of them ever really intersect. They seem like they should do something. Catwoman should be Catwoman and steal something and be a neutral character, but she's never that character. Batman only shows up at the very end. It's a flawed movie. That doesn't mean it's not fun. There's sex reasons for no reason, right? There's Batman, but he's not really using any gadgets. And the one time he uses a gadget, it backfires on him and he's accused of kidnap / murder. I think in the end of the day, you've got to see it, because after this, it gets crazy, and then by the time we get to Nolan, it's all about gadgets and heavy plot. This is that weird in-between space that doesn't make it a good movie on its own, but in retrospect fills an interesting gap.
And it almost, in retrospect, fills this perspective of what is Batman to everyone else, because Batman, to us, is always there. He's always vigilant. He's always watching. However, to Catwoman, to Penguin, to Mr. Freeze, to whomever, Batman just sort of shows up at random times, which is why, you know, once again to foreshadow, the Scarecrow says, oh, you got... No, not even the... It wasn't the Scarecrow, but it was this random street drug sailor guy. He was like, oh, you got more power of, you know, winning the Super Bowl than running into Batman.
That's exactly it.
Absolutely true. If you really think about it from individual to individual in Gotham, it's just Batman really just shows up sort of at random for some people.
Sure.
It's like, okay, just because a crime is happening, that doesn't mean Batman's going to show up to stop it. That just means that it's a likely event. It's not guaranteed. So, it's weird how this movie almost touches on that randomity of how Batman only shows up for, quote-unquote, the super important things.
No, and that's what it is. Because, like, and you see this show up in comics, if you guys read comics, that there's that that book called The Joker, where it's all about the Joker getting out of prison. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, it's the number two at the end who appeals to Batman to show up to stop the Joker. Because Batman is so distant sometimes, because until something happens, there's no way for him really to know.
Right.
And that's what this movie is. In the end of the day, though, I think if you're a Batman person, you've got to see it, because it's a fascinating transition point.
Mm-hmm.
However, once again, we're out of time for Myopia Defend Your Childhood. Please follow us, as I mentioned earlier, follow us on Facebook, Stitcher, I'm on Twitter, and we will make sure you hear us, review us, and share with your friends, because if you don't, we'll die. So sad. So alone. And once again, I'm Nick Hoffman, and please tune in next time when a little bit of your childhood once more goes on trial.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!